Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Joy Vibe Radio with the Align and Fly Girls.
Hello everybody, welcome to Joy Vibe Radio. This is Natasha Martinčić, also known as Ashvata elsewhere, from Slovenia, Europe. I am a member of a Masterheart group of 8 women with various unique talents who are inspiring each other and others to align and fly into their highest and best possibilities. I would also like to say hello to all of Slovenian listeners. Lep pozdrav vsem poslušalcem v Sloveniji in dobrodošli na radiju Joy Vibe ali Vibracije radosti. Today we are hosting a man of extraordinary clarity and knowing, who has been an example of living happily and with passion for many, many years, to me personally and to many people across the world. His name is Martin Brofman. Martin Brofman, PhD, is the founder of the Brofman Foundation for the Advancement of Healing, which promotes the cause of healing in the world, as well as the particular technologies and techniques of healing which Martin Brofman has developed. The foundation encourages people to think for themselves and be themselves, since these are the elements they consider essential to wholeness and well-being. Dr. Brofman is also a former Wall Street computer expert and a student of psychology and comparative religion. He developed the body mirror system and the vision workshop through his experiences of releasing himself of a terminal illness which traditional medicine had considered hopeless and untreatable, and returned to perfect health. During his own healing process, he learned much about the body-mind interface, the relationship between the body and the consciousness, and how it works. Then he developed a model in order to clarify these ideas for himself, as well as to provide a vehicle for teaching them easily and quickly to others. He and many instructors he has trained teach his healing and vision improvement methods worldwide. He has also written 2 books, Anything Can Be Healed and Improve Your Vision, which have been published in 10 languages. I've had the pleasure to meet Martin myself in person to translate both of his books and to interpret him at a seminar in Slovenia. And today I would like to welcome him with us on the show. Welcome, Martin.
Hi, Natasha.
And what a pleasure it is to have you with us today.
Pleasure for me to be here.
Yes. You know, what I would like to focus on today's show with you is the relation between individual abundance and co-creation. You have a remarkable way of explaining this with your system of thought. So before we go on to the relationship between individual abundance and co-creation, could you sum up your philosophy in one sentence?
In one sentence? Be yourself, do what you love, and trust your trip.
Yes, indeed.
In one sentence. When we see someone with a symptom, the symptom on the physical level reflects tension in their consciousness about something happening in their life at that time. So basically we can say, show me someone with a symptom, I'll show you someone who's unhappy about something. So then Bernie Siegel has said happy people are much less likely to have any kind of symptom. And what that means to me is do what makes you happy and stop doing what makes you unhappy. And trust that.
Yes, very simple. And many people would agree with that. Yet they would somehow find it difficult to let go of things that make them unhappy. How would you suggest they make this transition to doing more of the things that make them happy. How did that happen for you?
Well, normally if we're just discussing it like this, it sounds like a philosophical discussion. But when someone develops a symptom, a physical symptom, because they're really unhappy about something, then it brings it into a more practical perspective. And for me, I was faced with a life and death situation. And so that made it really practical. I have to take a look at my life and see what it is I don't feel good about and do something about it, or else I'm going to die. So as I say, within this very practical way of looking at it, it was clear what I needed to do.
Mm-hmm.
People who are not dealing with life and death situations, who are not dealing with symptoms, then for them it has to be a self-motivation. They have to get themselves in gear and just look at themselves and ask themselves, you know, are they really happy? Are there parts of their life that they're not happy about? And what do they need to do about it? And I think just the drive to be happy should be enough. Some people are working on their consciousness, doing self-development programs, and
mm-hmm.
within some disciplines they talk about living deliberately, making deliberate decisions instead of walking around in some cultural trance.
Yes. Just by following your passions, following your heart desires, just doing what makes your heart sing, and simply letting go of other things that don't make your heart sing is the best choice in life.
Well, we're told by people who work with consciousness that if we listen to our inner voice, our intuition or our instinct, it guides us to success and fulfillment. And this inner voice speaks a really simple language. Either it feels good or it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
And everything else is politics. And if this is the message at the deepest level of our being, then it has to be true at all levels of our being. So again, we come down to do what makes you happy and stop doing what makes you unhappy. And just staying in touch with yourself so that in every moment you can ask yourself, how am I feeling here now doing this? My own little alarm clock is to be able to say, I love where I am, and I love who I'm with, and I love what I'm doing. And if I can say that, I'm in the right place at the right time doing the right thing.
Yes.
And if I'm not comfortable to say that, then I have to do something about it in that moment. So if I don't feel good to say I love where I am, maybe I'm supposed to be somewhere else. If I'm not comfortable to say I love who I'm with, love being with this person right now,
mm-hmm.
well, maybe I'm not supposed to be with this person right now. It's I'm not comfortable to say I love what I'm doing. I have to be doing something different. And in this way, with this kind of self-inquiry, you take a look inside at how you're feeling about what you're doing in the here and now. And so it's not just a mental exercise. It's a practical thing that we apply moment to moment mm-hmm. in our everyday life.
Very practical indeed. I've always enjoyed your simple philosophy, the way you explain things, and I think you have also just answered all the questions I've had for you. But I believe that there are things that we can explain even more so that our listeners can get the most out of the show. So how could you say that this inner sense of guidance translates into the relation, or let's say into the path to our individual abundance? And when I say abundance, I mean not just financial abundance, but abundance of health, abundance of clarity, abundance of happy moments, abundance of friends.
Okay, I use a map of the consciousness. So we can say that everything that we experience, everything that's possible for us to experience, can be divided into 7 categories. And each portion of your consciousness is associated with one of these energy centers, one of these chakras. And the chakra that I associate with prosperity and abundance is the throat chakra. And the throat chakra is about expressing, expressing you. That can be about communicating, it can be about expressing what you want or expressing what you feel, or it can be about just expressing you in what you're doing. So, if we're talking about abundance, we can say most people, it seems, in order to earn a living, are doing something that they don't really enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I would more associate with the solar plexus chakra. It's working with the Judeo-Christian work ethic, where you begin with a perception of a lack, something that's missing in your life, and you need to do something about it. And if you don't do, you don't get. So you do to get.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to do something you don't really enjoy in order to get money, in order to have the thing that you enjoy. But the dynamics at the throat chakra are different. You don't do to get, you do to do. So, for example, this radio program you're doing it because it feels good to do it.
Yes.
That's your motivation. And when you come from this motivation, then the universe supports you in that. Things happen in a particular way. If we talk to the people who have really been a success in life, if we talk to Richard Branson, for example, and we ask, what's your secret? He says, live your passion.
Mm-hmm.
And that means do what you really enjoy. So if we translate this into everyday talk, you know, we can say, well, what does somebody do if they have a job they don't really like? And I'd say, okay, that's your bread and butter job for now, and on your own time, just do something you love. So let's say, for example, you like putting on a clown suit and going out and playing with kids just for the fun of it.
Yeah.
You do it because it feels good, so in the economics of good feelings, you're spending more time feeling pleasure. And then somebody comes over to you one day and says, look, my kid is having an 8th birthday, and if you come over here and do it for my kid and his friends, I'll pay you for it. So then you start getting paid for things that you enjoy doing. And eventually, you get very good at it, and soon you're being paid as much or more doing the thing you love as the thing that you don't really enjoy. And then you're able to cross over. Then you're able to just let go of the thing that you're not really having a good time with.
Mm-hmm.
And step in with both feet to the thing that you do just for the sake of doing, but still allowing yourself to receive, allowing yourself to be supported by that.
Yeah.
So you have to allow yourself to get paid for what you enjoy doing. In working with the dynamics of consciousness, I work with the idea that we have total freedom, that we can really do anything. But the idea is to do what we do in a way that serves the society, in a way that's of service. And then that thing is organic. So, we could look at James Bond, for example. Well, I mean, he's a murderer, he's a thief, he's a liar. But works for the good guys. So he's the hero. And the other people doing the same thing, they're working in a way that's not organic. And so, in any organism, in the human organism, if there's a part of the organism that is threatened, let's say an infection in a part of the body, mm-hmm. the whole organism mobilizes to fight that threat.
Yeah.
And it happens like that in society as well. If somebody is doing something that threatens the organism, the society, their actions are going to be discouraged. The whole organism will mobilize in a way to discourage what they do. But if what they do is being done in a way that serves the organism, then it's organic, and then the entire organism mobilizes to support that. And for me, that's the throat chakra.
Mm-hmm.
It's about listening to your intuition and following a path of least resistance where things have a tendency to happen. And in that state of consciousness, we call it grace, in fact. You happen to be in the right place at the right time for things to happen in the right way for you. And your experience it on the inside is, life provides all my needs with no effort on my part at all. I think of things and they happen. And you begin to see more and more the universe as a benevolent entity supporting you in
yes.
whatever.
So we could say that the entire organism of the universe, this benevolent organism which is always here, actually in every cell of our body, in every atom of the air, everywhere you look at, in everything you feel, is like an organism that is always responding in the same way to our actions. When we choose to do something that we love and we do it just for the sake of doing it, like you say, it is that trust or knowing or understanding that the whole universe functions like the micro universe within.
Yeah, it's about learning to trust it. In the state of consciousness that I'm talking about, it's as though you're inside watching a movie that's playing around you. It's like you're walking through a dream that you're dreaming, and things seem to be outside you, but if it's your dream, the projector is inside you. And when people are working with their consciousness, at first, at some point, they have to learn that when they decide something, it happens. It's like lucid dreaming. It's like mm-hmm. telling the dream, wait a minute, I'm dreaming you. So now I want this dream to unfold so that that happens. And then you watch the dream change according to whatever you have decided to believe is possible. But after a while, the dream itself becomes like another being. It feels like you're interacting with another consciousness. And some people call this other consciousness God, or generically we can just call it the universe. So it seems like it's outside you, but it's a reflection of what's inside you in a really deep place. And in that interaction, then it begins to offer you options. And then you have the choice of saying okay and walking through that doorway in that moment, or no thanks, and deciding something different. So you're following a certain flow. Things are flowing. As I say, it's moving along a path of least resistance. And when you are in that flow, that's where things manifest. And then you recognize that the stuff that's being offered to you, in fact, is stuff that you had thought about before and at the universe.
Yes, indeed.
And then it's delivering it to you.
And Martin, how did that happen for you? How did you recognize that it all functions like that?
When I had to begin to heal myself, I just had to get in touch with a deep part of me and function from that place, and just, I would say, function in a way that was very different from the way I had functioned before. When I had the terminal cancer in 1975, during the operation that I had, I went through the tunnel that people talk about. And mm-hmm. I came back different, feeling like some kind of cosmic being where I would say, I don't know what to believe. I don't know what religion is a good one. I don't know what way of being is a good one. And I looked around and I thought there must be some way of being that everybody agrees is good. So let me see if I can find it. And I didn't find anything that everybody agreed was good.
Mm-hmm.
And so I looked around and asked, maybe I can find something that everybody agrees is bad. And I didn't find anything there either. It seemed there was always relative. So I said, well, you know, that gives me a certain freedom. I can just pretty much do what I want to be, who I want. And there'll always be people who appreciate that and others who are going to criticize it. But I have the choice of who I want to be around. And so following this flow, I began to notice how things were happening. I went through a period of letting go of everything. I decided that, well, if stress and tension was creating illness and relaxation enhanced it, let me take a look at everything in my life that I don't feel good about. And with a willingness to let go of everything, because it was a matter of life and death. And I thought, okay, whatever stays with me is part of my trip. And whatever doesn't, well, it just isn't part of my trip anymore. And so with this sense of letting go, then it was like no longer taking a personal responsibility for success. Let's say for money.
Mm-hmm.
I was at a point where I was in the hospital, I was incapable of working, and there was nothing I could do that was going to bring in money.
Yeah.
And I had to let go of control in that sense. And then the universe responded, and money started coming in from here and there. And I began to look at these dynamics as a different model than what I had seen before, as a kind of interaction with another level of consciousness. And this is where I began to notice it and paid more and more attention to it, of what happened when I moved along this path of least resistance. When I was sick, I also was nearsighted.
Yes.
And after the operation, I couldn't wear my glasses anymore. They were too heavy for me, and they would pull my head down because the operation was on the back of my neck. And what I noticed was, okay, if I wasn't happy about not seeing something that was far away, I put my attention on something close mm-hmm. instead. And I just didn't care if my vision wasn't particularly clear. I had other more important things to look at. And in my vision book, I talk about this process of selective vision. I would walk into a room, and the whole room would be blurry. And then one person in the room would look more clear. And I wondered about that. Why is this person clear? So I would go over to this person and just see what we felt like talking about. And then after a while, they became blurry, and somebody else was clear. And so I looked at, you know, why is that? And so I just followed this flow of clarity, I can say.
Mm. I love
and began to notice, I began to notice how things were happening when I did that. And then I would wonder, well, you know, if I'm looking at this as a television set, who is it or what consciousness is it that's making this part more clear? Well, this must be my higher consciousness, this must be my spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And so I began to recognize this interaction with my spirit. And it's like after that, when you see things like that, you're no longer alone. I mean, you're always in contact with your spirit.
Mm-hmm.
So these spiritual dimensions began to show themselves to me. And in terms of religion, I looked around and I said, well, what do I want to believe in? You know, it's, if God is a big father figure in the sky, I'm a father, what do I want of my kids? You know, do I want them to make themselves smaller? Do I want them to bow down to me, or do I want unquestioning obedience, or
mm-hmm.
do I want them to be all that they can possibly be, the fullest expression of themselves?
Yeah.
So I thought, well, let me take a look at various religions, and there must be something that they all have in common, something that they all say. And the other stuff is just, I would say, cultural flavor, but not really the essence of the religion. And so I did that, and I got a sense of what I would consider is an ultimate truth. I mean, it's a little tricky to use the word ultimate, but the thing that makes the most sense, because it seems to be an essential part of every religion.
Yeah. And I really like what you said a few moments ago. You said you were following a flow of clarity. And I love this phrase so much, because when you allow yourself to just go with this clarity, then it must be clear to you that, okay, now this is the thing that I really feel like doing now. This would make me happy right now. Even if it's just going for a walk or calling a friend, because even if you don't know why you feel like doing this thing right now, why is it making you happy right now, you will know sooner or later. This is how I see and understand your path, the way you are explaining it.
Yes, because a lot of people would put their attention on the non-clarity, and they would say, why do I not see clearly? Why is this other thing blurry? And then their attention is on the resistance, instead of asking themselves, what do I need to do, or what do I need to know to be clear? What do I need to succeed? Not what barriers are there to my success, because then my attention is on the barriers. It's like walking into a room and asking yourself how you need to overcome the darkness. Well, you just put on the light, and the light and the darkness are mutually exclusive, so you hold your attention on what you need for success.
Mm-hmm.
What is your picture of success? Let that be the picture you put into your consciousness.
This is also the same thing as looking at things and selecting what you want to focus on, selective vision or selective thought processes. And if you look at the big picture, how would you describe this whole path from the beginning, when you found out that you had a terminal illness, till this day, when you can see it beautifully from a very, very broad perspective, and just give some kind of an image that could help listeners see it, you know, from the beginning to the start, from non-clarity to clarity.
When I began, I was working on Wall Street. I was a computer fraud expert on Wall Street, and commuting an hour and a half, and living the American dream, a house in the suburbs, a wife, two children, two cars in the garage, and a big dog. But I wasn't happy. And I remember one time on the train going home, looking around and seeing the other people who worked in the same company with their gray suits and their gray ties and their gray shirts and their gray faces, drinking their canned cocktails, and I was listening to Simon and Garfunkel singing Nothing But the Dead and Dying in My Little Town, and I knew what they meant, okay? So I just wasn't happy, and I knew I wasn't happy, but I thought everybody else is unhappy like this too, because everybody else seemed to be in the same boat. But then when I got the diagnosis, in one sense, I was okay to die, because I wasn't very happy where I was. But in another sense, being okay to die, being accepting the possibility of death, I could say, well, okay, if I might be dead in a few minutes, between now and then, what do I want to do? Because if I'm going to spend the time feeling bad about where I am, I will have wasted the rest of my life. So I might as well have a good time. So that changed something in my consciousness, and I began to look at life in a very different way. I had been given a month or two to live, unless I coughed or sneezed, and then I could die immediately, I was told. And after 2 months, I was talking to death and saying, well, you know, they gave me 2 months maximum, and this is 2 months today, are you coming? And this voice in my head said, when the time comes, you'll know, so what do you want to do now? And I thought, okay, I have another hour or 10 minutes or whatever. And so it was moment to moment, here and now, what do I want to do now, and now, and now. And if I got hungry, I thought the next meal might be the last meal I was going to have. What do I want to eat? Well, I tell you, if your next meal is your last meal, you really don't care what people say about carcinogens and calories and carbohydrates and stuff. If you want to have a hot dog, this is going to be the greatest hot dog the world has ever known. So I was just into appreciating the quality of life in the present moment. And even if I was walking down the street and it was raining and cold, I would say to myself, this is what it feels like, walking down the street and feeling rainy and cold. You know, it's part of life. And I began to get into life again and enjoying life and just spending more and more of my day doing what I want, where I want, with whom I want. And after 8 months, I was still alive and celebrating in Club Med in Martinique. And while I was there, I got into a talk with a man teaching Zen meditation. And he said, cancer begins in your mind, and that's where you can go to get rid of it. And suddenly I understood what he was talking about. And I didn't have to depend upon something or anybody outside myself. I could go inside. What I had learned growing up was to trust myself. And so a short time after that, some friends suggested I listen to an introductory talk of the Silver Method. At the time, it was called Silver Mind Control. Mm-hmm. And when I went there, I heard ideas that made a lot of sense to me. And I decided to jump into it with both feet, using my mind as a tool, going to alpha, going to deep states of relaxation, using affirmation, visualization, positive thinking. And so all through this, I was more and more just in touch with myself and working on myself for 2 months. I continued to imagine every day the tumor getting smaller and imagining what it would be like. After the process was complete, the doctors were going to examine me and scratch their head and say, well, maybe you made a mistake, this happened there. And so after 2 months, I went to see the doctor, and he scratched his head and said, maybe you made a mistake, this happened there. I left in knowing that I was living a scene that I had created. Mm-hmm. And because I didn't have to think about this anymore, now it was 1 year after I had been diagnosed, I just asked myself, what do I want to do with my life now? Let me continue this process of just doing what I love and...
in this moment.
In this moment, and not doing what I don't want.
Mm-hmm.
At the time I was still working, I decided I would define my job with that. If I should be able to do just what I love and not do what I don't love, I can make a list of all the parts about my job that I love. And my job should be only that. And how do I know if I love it? Well, if I would do it even if I wasn't getting paid.
Mm-hmm.
And my list was very short. In fact, the only thing on it was getting paid. So I thought, well, this is crazy. That means they're going to pay me to do nothing here. A week later, there was a shift in the management, and everybody else in this department of 30 and myself had nothing to do. And I thought, this is bizarre, but I'm happy in this meeting. And after about a month, the other people were complaining about getting paid to do nothing. And I thought, but if we're dealing with free will, they should be able to get paid and do nothing. I should be able to, I'm sorry, they should be able to get paid for working, and I should be okay to get paid to do nothing. And a week later, there was another shift in the management. Everybody else was given something to do, and I wasn't. I went into my boss and said I had nothing to do. And he said, we know. And I said, why don't I have something to do? He said, well, now you need a special security clearance. You don't have it. And I said, well, I get it. And he said, well, we have something for you to do. And I said, you know I'm doing nothing. You're okay? He said, yes. So I said, well, it's okay for me. And I went back to my desk. And for the next 2 years, I did nothing. Just talking to my friends, reading books. And it's a large organization I work for. So one day, a guy came over and he said, what do you do here? And I said, nothing. And he asked, how much do you get paid? And I told him. So he asked if I needed an assistant. I said, well, I'll ask my boss. So I went in, and my boss said, okay. And so I sat behind a corner with some books, and I still had nothing to do, but now I had something to think about.
Mm-hmm.
So I went back in. I said, you know, now I'm a supervisor, and I haven't had a raise in 2 years. And he said, yeah, you're right. So he gave me a raise. And I thought, well, I mean, this is a lovely movie. I'm getting paid to do nothing. But I still have to be here on time to do nothing and dress a certain way to do nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And so, in a sense, I've just been selling my freedom.
Yeah.
Well, is the price high enough? And I decided, no. What price would be enough? No price. So that's when I decided to retire. I was 38 years old, and I had no money in the bank and no idea how I was going to earn money. But I just decided it's time to just trust the universe. And it felt a bit like stepping off a cliff and not knowing if it's a 3-millimeter drop or a 3-kilometer drop. And if it's 3 kilometers, maybe there's a strong updraft that's going to carry me.
Yeah.
But I just had to take the step. It was an inner drive. It was something I had to do. At this time, I had been exploring my consciousness and giving some people healings. And so once in a while, I would earn some money, and I'd have enough to eat. And somebody said, why don't you put together a vision improvement program with what you've learned about eyesight, because my eyesight cleared up as the result of the healing.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, and then a second person asked the same thing. And I thought, if I hear it 3 times, and then a third person has the same thing. So rather than seeing it as 3 people suggesting something, I saw it as the dream suggesting something, the universe offering an option that sounded good if I could come up with my own good reasons for doing it. And as a personal challenge, it made sense. So I put together the vision workshop using systems techniques, techniques that I had used to design computer systems, just working with a higher class of computer.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a success. And, okay, this was a lot more interesting than working on Wall Street. And still, it was just living on the edge. I had no money. And one day, here I was, $2 in my pocket, and 2 weeks before the next class, I thought, I don't have enough money to get to the next class. In fact, I don't have enough money to eat for the next 2 weeks. What am I going to do? And I thought, people in prisons, when they go on hunger strikes, it takes them 2 months to die. I'm not going to die. If I'm a little uncomfortable, I can handle that. So I let go. I decided maybe I'm just on a fast for 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And then an hour later, someone would call for healing. And
an hour later.
At the end of that night, yeah, an hour later. So it kept going like that, just on the edge. One night, thinking to myself, the rent is due tomorrow. I don't have the rent. What am I going to do? And the voice on my head saying, do you have what you need right now? And I said, yeah. Has it always been like that? I said, yeah. Well, see how tomorrow morning becomes another right now. That got handled. And I had no choice. So I had to say, okay. And by the next morning, in fact, I had the rent. And it just went on like that for 5 years. Just
next morning.
Yeah.
It seems like the speed of manifestation matches the speed of letting go.
Yes, it can be like that. Or just accepting, you know.
Yeah.
And it went on like that for 5 years. And then one day I was invited to Texas to teach a class. I arrived with 21 in my pocket. An intention to be there for 2 weeks and have enough money to eat and play. And the day I got there, people found out. They asked for healing. And I had enough money to eat and play. And with what I was going to earn from the class, I was going to get one of my daughter's synthesizer. And they started at about $600. The class came together. It was really small, about $300. And I was a little down in and out, but I had to give the people what they were there for. And in fact, as a class, it was a good class. I was happy with the games. And after the class, a woman from the class came over, and she said, I have a gift for you. And she gave me a check for $50,000. And I didn't know what to say. She said, well, here, no strings. You were wondering where the money was going to come from. Here it is. No conditions. I said, thank you. I gave her a hug, and I walked away. And for me, that was an act of unconditional receiving, being willing to receive without guilt, without a sense of obligation, just to say thank you and appreciate it, and do with it what made me happy, because that's all the person wanted of me.
Yeah.
And since that act of unconditional receiving, I haven't worried about money ever again. And so I live my life like that now. And sometimes classes are successful, sometimes not so successful, but somehow things always manage to work themselves out. And I've learned to trust the universe and how it works.
So you could also say that it is by unconditionally following your joy, unconditionally doing things that make you happy, you are being unconditionally open to receiving.
Yes. And there's another interesting element to this if we talk about throat chakra. The throat chakra, by the way, is something that I would associate with unconditional receiving.
Mm-hmm.
And the heart chakra with unconditional giving.
Mm-hmm.
As you're moving along your path of least resistance, you have freedom to do what you want and express yourself in any way you choose. And when you express yourself and express your love in a way that serves other people's purposes, then when your needs are met, they are also met through an expression of love.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of your initial question of how personal abundance works in the dynamics of co-creation,
yes.
This is what I see. So my thoughts were of what I would do for somebody else, my daughter in that case, and my needs were met with somebody else deciding what they would do to serve my needs.
Yes.
So it, for me, was a combination of giving unconditionally, just doing for the joy of doing.
That's right.
At the same time, having the willingness to be open to receive unconditionally.
Yes. And now we have a perfect circle where you do things because they make you happy. You wanted to buy a synthesizer for your daughter because that would make you happy and, of course, also make her happy.
That's right.
And the circle was completed because by doing that, you also receive what you asked for.
That's right. And in fact, it was way beyond what I had asked for, but it gave me a means of clearing up all my debts, being debt-free for the first time in my life, mm-hmm. owing nobody anything. And, well, we can say that inside I had been wishing that I didn't have any debts. So it did serve that need. It was that goal that had been fulfilled by that act of just doing what I did for the sake of doing it. And mm-hmm. I guess people can take a look at the example and put it together in any way that makes sense to them and figure what it was that I did right.
Yes, and I know that there are many people, let's say deliberate creators, who would say, oh, you were wishing to have no debt, but you know that if you think about debt, then you're going to have more debt. But actually, it is not really about how you frame your sentence or your desire at the core or at the essence of your desire. It's abundance.
It was a wish to be debt-free.
Yes.
And that was the positive picture.
That's right. And I would like to come back just for a moment to the moment where you felt comfortable doing nothing at the job you had. And I think that that's a point where people start feeling guilty and they cannot see a bigger picture or cannot understand how this can bring them the life that they want to live, the happiness that they want to have in their life, and the abundance that they wish to have.
Yeah, I have to bring in another element here. You know, we have to be careful how it manifests.
Yeah.
Some people, to be paid to do nothing, they feel they have to get sick, for example, and then the government mm-hmm. supports them. Working with the idea that we choose our parents, and that there is something perfect in that, I looked at my parents and asked myself what kind of polarity did they represent. I think we can all look at our parents and say, my dad was too much like that and my mother was too much in the other direction. And there's some way that makes sense. So my father was in World War II, and the citation for the Silver Star that he got said that he threw himself on a grenade and his legs were blown off. So he got paid for the rest of his life to sit home, play cards, watch TV, and take drugs.
Uh-huh.
And my mother, on the other hand, worked for the government doing something she didn't enjoy with people she didn't like in order to save enough money to retire to her little condominium. And I thought, okay, that's extreme in the other direction. So my father was doing nothing and getting paid, and my mother was working hard at something she didn't enjoy, doing something.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, my perception of my parents defines the place that's mine. So if I look in both directions, I'd say that's extreme for me, and the other way is extreme for me. My way seems to be about, I better do something, but what I do should be something that I enjoy.
Yeah.
Okay, and that was the path I chose. That was the conscious choice.
Mm-hmm. And that makes sense, perfect sense, if you look at it from the perspective that we all come here for the joy of it.
Yes.
And the more we enjoy, the more doors open to us.
And the healthier we are.
Yes. And there we have abundance on all levels.
Yes. And it's not irresponsible to want to be happy. It is the most responsible thing you can do to make yourself a positive energy center, an example of what is possible, and radiate positive energy to the world around you.
Mm.
And that affects other people's lives in a positive way and has a ripple effect.
Yes. Is there are there any recent stories from your life that you would like to close this conversation with?
Well, my son's birthday.
I love your stories. That's what I'm asking. I always enjoy listening to you. It's so much fun. So much clarity in one place.
The beginning of last month, I was at home. I got a call from Beverly Hills Hotel in Beverly Hills, California. They had a guest who wanted to meet me.
Mm-hmm.
So would it be okay? They would fly me there first class and spend a few days there. I said, well, okay, if I can bring my family, because my son, it's his birthday coming up. So they said, okay. They flew us out there first class. And in fact, it was a Saudi sheikh and his wife wanted to meet me. And I asked, what do you want? She said she wanted to stop smoking. I said, come on. You got to have something more interesting than that. So I gave her a couple of feelings for some other things. And in any event, the sheikh knew it was my son's birthday, so he decided to give him some gift, and he gave him an iPod Touch and an iPad and MacBook and everything. So and so it was just a joyride of abundance. We had a great time, and sitting at the table having dinner, and there's Denzel Washington at the next table, you know, looking at different movie stars who were there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the interesting thing, the really interesting thing about this story is that a couple of days before the phone call that I received, my son was in a conversation with one of his buddies in school, and they were talking about iPads, which were not available in Denmark at that time. And my son was boasting that he had an iPad. He didn't.
Oh, he didn't.
He didn't. And friends, well, I don't believe you. So they bet a piece of candy, you know, and my son was going to prove to him that he had an iPad. So a few days later, here we are on this trip, and he comes back with an iPad.
So talk about the creator.
Yeah, he's a really strong creator. So, you know, we have to look at kids also. They are no less creators than adults.
Yeah.
So co-creation, that is our family now, is absolutely enhanced by his positive beliefs and his positive way of thinking and being. So,
yes, kids are wonderful teachers. What a wonderful story. You got asked to travel half of the world just to help somebody quit smoking and have fun.
In order to get an iPad for myself.
In order to get an iPad for yourself.
For him to manifest it, and I was just taking a ride on his wish, you know.
Yes, amazing.
That was great.
Simply amazing. Well, Martin, this has been a most inspiring, refreshing conversation, and I appreciate you for joining us here very much. Thank you.
It's
thank
nice
you.
To meet
thank
you.
Thank
Natasha,
you.
It's a pleasure. It's always nice to talk to you. And thank you for this time.
Thank you, too. And dear listeners, we are winding up our conversation with Martin Brofman today. Martin, is there a way people can contact you? Where can they find you?
I have a website. It's easy to remember, www.healer.ch. So it's in Switzerland, Healer, H-E-A-L-E-R, and they can find out what I do and how to contact me, where our classes are, how to learn healing, and I have articles on the website about chakras and various topics, eyesight improvement,
and information about the upcoming seminars.
Yes.
All across the world.
Yes.
Okay, great. So, again, your internet address is www.healer.ch.
That's it.
And if anybody would like to know more, you are welcome to visit Martin Brofman's website. So thank you very much again, Martin. I'm looking forward to talking with you again and seeing you, meeting you in person whenever the time comes. And I wish you a beautiful day.
Thank you, Natasha.
All the listeners, a beautiful day, and enjoy what you are doing in each moment. Have fun.
Yes, absolutely.
Live
thank
your
you
life.
For this time.
Thank you, too.
Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Yeah.
Love is my religion.
Believe.